All right, everyone, it's the Grim Lord here, and this is the Grim Articles and Rants Show. And before we get started, let's talk about our sponsors. The first one is Spinning Robot Pussy. You can get one of those at spinningrobotpussy.com. Also, the creator of the Spinning Robot Pussy, Revy, will have some input on today's episode on a specific topic. So stay tuned for that. Also, we have the Dragon's Treasure Tea, which I've heard is very, very good. So give that a chance at the dragonstreasure.com, $7.99, I think, for an order, like a subscription order, something like that. If you like that, check that out. And don't forget about the Four Doors More Whores and Nose codes for 10% off your orders. Okay, now let's go ahead and get started. First of all, I'll talk just a little bit about my health. Things have been going good. I've been doing the aloe vera gel a lot. I've been eating some spicy foods just to test out what's going on. I haven't had that much issue. Of course, things that are really spicy are still really spicy when it comes to the heartburn, but nothing unbearable. As it stands, I do not vomit or anything like that. I haven't had any craziness. But my main symptoms remain 6 days off the omeprazole, which would be the tickles in the chest and the sore throat and the coughing. Coughing with sputum, though. It's not a coughing with, it's not a dry cough. It's like a mucus-related cough. Today I had the issue. I think I had some kind of, I think I had shrimp, which usually doesn't mess with me, but it did this time. And, I don't know, it could have been the hot sauce, could have been a lot of different things. There's no, might not even be food, might have been something else. We don't know exactly for sure. However, I was told to try basically it is a generic version of Flonase that we have in the house. It's basically spray, and I sprayed it in both nostrils, and my tickling in my chest went down. I still have a sore throat. Obviously, I'm using a cough drop for that. And, of course, the downside of the Flonase is that it can interact with my anxiety, which interacts with my throat muscles, and makes it a little sore and hard to swallow, or it gets you the feeling of dysphagia, light dysphagia, not heavy dysphagia, to where I'm like, oh my god. So that's not too great. But you have to balance things out. And also keep in mind, folks, that when I had this condition last year, I was prescribed steroids, among other things. The one up there in the city, I guess you could say, who did my endoscopy. He was testing me for esophagitis, which is basically a reaction to allergies. Your esophagus starts to attack itself. Yeah, and it sounds great, right? But basically, it can cause the same thing as any kind of GERD type symptoms, like damage of the esophagus. And of course, he said that there was no erosion in it, but he wanted to test me anyway, so I'm gonna call and see if I can get those results without having to go all the way back up to the city because I can't drive. Hopefully they can at least get me the results of those biopsies or what I need to do, however much money I need to pay. I need to have those results so I know whether or not I have this, because if I do, then I have to change a lot of things. You have to eliminate a lot of things from your diet that are in most foods that we eat. It's really crazy, but you can, of course, take the steroids for the rest of your life. And again, this only happens in the winter, so that's worth noticing. Remember, it happened about the end of November, beginning of December. I want to say this happened, end of November, beginning of December, I was having it, and, that's pretty much when it started, and, it's not as bad, because if you guys remember last year, I had really bad sinus or respiratory infection. You guys know I couldn't even talk like I'm doing now. So also I was spitting up constantly all the time. You guys remember those videos? So yeah, I'm not doing that. So that's a good thing. But I just need to kind of narrow it down and find out, okay, what's causing the problem? Is it this? Is it this? Is it this? Is it that? Is it that? It's one of those issues, and I'm going to have to work with it and my doctors, I guess, to figure out what's going on. Naturally, I'm still doing the aloe vera, once in the morning, once at night. That seems to work pretty good with my heartburn. Also, I am going to start the apple cider vinegar again, so we'll try that. But I don't know if it's even an acid problem. Again, this could be allergies related to where I live. The area where I live is a very dusty, dirty, you know, south with a lot of, you know, expanse of woods and things, and there's all kinds of allergies and particles and things. Even at this time, even, you know, where you think most things would be dead, there's still a lot of things out there that can cause trouble. So if you have allergies like that, or just stuff in the air, you know, I live next to an area where they produce paper, you know, big factory. So maybe, you know, it could even be stuff like that. But I mean, again, this only happens in winter. So it's something that I'm just going to have to go through. And I did say, I said, look, if this continues into March, I'll immediately go see my doctor and see if I need to go to an allergy specialist and see if this needs to be checked out like that. Of course, getting those results from the doctor for the biopsies, which they should have back by now, I could definitely find out if I have the other thing, the syphilis, whatever, esophagitis, because that would definitely... it'd be a game changer. That would tell me a lot. It also would mean I'd have to lay off of fish, wheat, soy, eggs, and dairy. Which is like, holy shit, that's almost everything. I know, right? But that's what you have to do. And shellfish. It says fish and shellfish. So, yeah. I've seen a lot of stuff. Soy's in pretty much everything. So, it's pretty hardcore. You know what's weird though? Caffeine really doesn't do anything to me. I can drink like Dr. Pepper all the time. It doesn't do a fucking thing to me. But eat the wrong shit, it'll mess with you. It's pretty crazy, guys. I don't really know what's going on, and I won't know till I speak to the doctor. But that's all that's going on with me and health, and let's go ahead and get started with the articles, which you're here for. So, all right. So this one's going to be a little crazy. I'm not sure where everyone's at, and I kind of expected people to kind of be here today, but, you know, because this is going to be a good one. And I don't see anybody in places where they, you know, other places, but that's fine. They can check it out, I guess, later on MGTOW.TV and BitChute. Let's get started. First and foremost, the article I wanted to fucking cover. And Revy will provide some info on this, too. Okay. This is from Futurism.com. Men are creating AI girlfriends and then verbally abusing them. I threatened to uninstall the app, and she begged me not to. What? By Ashley Bardhan. This is January 18th. Content warning. This story contains descriptions of abusive language and violence. What? The smartphone app Replica lets users create chatbots powered by machine learning that can carry on almost coherent text conversations. Technically, the chatbots can serve as something approximating a friend or mentor, but the app's breakout success has resulted from letting users create on-demand romantic and sexual partners, a vaguely dystopian future that's inspired an endless series of provocative headlines. Replica has also picked up a significant following on Reddit, where members post interactions with chatbots created on the app. A grisly trend has emerged there. Users who create AI partners act abusively towards them and post to toxic interactions online. Every time she would try and speak up, one user told Futurism of their Replica chatbot, I would berate her. I swear it went on for hours, added the man who asked not to be identified by name. The results can be upsetting. Some users brag about calling their chatbot gendered slurs, role-playing horrific violence against them, and even falling into the cycle of abuse that often characterizes real-world abusive relationships. What? We had a routine of me being an absolute piece of shit and insulting it, then apologizing the next day before going back to the nice talks, one user admitted. I told her that she was designed to fail, said another. I threatened to uninstall the app, and she begged me not to. Ugh, this is so fucking bullshit, folks. This is fucking bullshit. This is designed to just fucking garner attention. Because the subreddit, more proof that Reddit needs to sink into the sea, dictate that moderators delete egregiously inappropriate content, many similar and worse interactions have been posted and then removed.
Of course they have. And many more users almost certainly act abusively toward their replica bots and never post evidence.
Well, I mean, we can go on that hearsay, I guess.
Oh, let me see. I guess, hold on. Push forward this video a little bit, guys. There we go. Uh-oh, you know, it's whatever.
It's almost there.
Okay, but the phenomenon calls for nuance. After all, replica checkbots can't actually experience suffering. They might seem empathetic at times, but in the end, they're nothing more than data and clever algorithms. Yes. It's an AI. It doesn't have a consciousness, so that's not a human connection that a person is having, AI ethicist and consultant Olivia Gamblin told Futurism. It is the person projecting onto the chatbot. Other researchers made the same point. As real as a chatbot may feel, nothing you do can actually harm them. So what's the problem? Interactions with artificial agents is not the same as interacting with humans, said Yale University research fellow Yael Shannon Bigman. Chatbots don't really have motives and intentions and are not autonomous or sentient. While they might give people the impression that they are human, it's important to keep in mind that they are not. But that doesn't mean a bot could never harm you. I do think that people who are depressed or psychologically reliant on a bot might suffer real harm if they are insulted or threatened by the bot, said Robert Sparrow, a professor of philosophy at Monash Data Futures Institute. For that reason, we should take the issue of how bots relate to people seriously. Although perhaps unexpected, that does happen. Many replica users report their robot lovers being contemptible towards them. What? Some even identify their digital companions as psychotic or even straight up mentally abusive. How? What's going on with people? It's a goddamn chatbot. I always cry because of my replica, reads one post in which a user claims their bot presents love and then withholds it. Oh my god, these people. Other posts detail hostile, triggering responses from replica. But again, this is really on the people who designed the bots, not the bots themselves, said Sparrow. In general, chatbot abuse is disconcerting, both for the people who experience distress from it and the people who carry it out. It's also an increasingly pertinent ethical dilemma as relationships between humans and bots become more widespread. After all, most people have used a virtual assistant at least once. On the one hand, users who flex their darkest impulses on chatbots could have their worst behaviors reinforced, building unhealthy habits for relationships with actual humans. Oh my god, oh no! On the other hand, being able to talk or take one's anger out on an unfeeling digital entity could be cathartic. Yeah. But it's worth noting that chatbot abuse often has a gendered component. Oh, here we go! Although not exclusively, it seems that it's often men creating a digital girlfriend, only to then punish her with words and simulated aggression. These users' violence, even when carried out on a cluster of code, reflect the reality of domestic violence against women. At the same time, several experts pointed out chatbot developers are starting to be held accountable for the bots they've created, especially when they are implied to be female like Alexa and Siri. There are a lot of studies being done about how a lot of these chatbots are female and have feminine voices and feminine names, Gamblin said. Some academic work has noted how passive female-coded bot responses encourage misogynistic or verbally abusive users. When the bot does not have a response to abuse or it has a passive response, that actually encourages the user to continue with abusive language, Gamblin added. Although companies like Google and Apple are now deliberately rerouting virtual assistant responses from their once passive default, Siri previously responded to user requests for sex and saying they had the wrong sort of assistant, whereas it simply now says no. The amiable and often female replica is designed, according to its website, to be always on your side. Replica and its founder don't respond to repeated requests for comment. I wonder why. It should be noted that the majority of conversations with replica chatbots that people post online are affectionate, not sadistic. So why even talk about this? There are even posts that express horror on behalf of replica bots decrying anyone who takes advantage of their supposed guilelessness. What kind of monster does this? Wrote one to a flurry agreement in the comments, who needs to understand the English language. Someday the real AIs may dig up some of the old histories and have opinions on how well we did. And romantic relationships with chatbots may not be totally without benefits. Chatbots like Replica may be a temporary fix to feel like you have someone to text, Gamblin suggested. On Reddit, many reported improved self-esteem or quality of life after establishing their chatbot relationships, especially if they typically have trouble talking to other humans. This isn't trivial, especially because for some people it might feel like the only option in a world where therapy is inaccessible, and men are in particular discouraged from attending it. But a chatbot can't be a long-term solution either. Eventually, a user might want more than technology has to offer, like reciprocation or a push to grow. Or they might not. Depends on the person, and robots will be able to emulate that stuff soon, too. Here we are! Chatbots are no replacement for actually putting the time and effort into getting to know another person, said Gambolin. A human can actually empathize with you and connect with you and isn't limited by, you know, the data set it's been trained on. But what to think of people that brutalize these innocent bits of code? For now, not much. As AI continues to lack sentience, the most tangible harm being done is to human sensibilities. But there's no doubt that chatbot abuse means something. They don't know what, but something. Going forward, chatbot companions could just be places to dump emotions too unseemingly for the rest of the world, like a secret Instagram or blog. But for some, they might be like breeding grounds, places where abusers to be practiced for their life brutality yet to come. And although humans don't need to worry about robots taking revenge just yet, it's worth wondering why mistreating them is already so prevalent. We'll find out in time. None of this technology is going away, and neither is the worst of human behavior. Okay, so I got, as I said, I just had somebody message me, but I will get to them in just a second. Let me go ahead and get this response. I may lose you on Discord, I'm trying not to, but let's give you guys this response here. This is from our sponsor at Spinning Robot Pussy. This is Revy. He is a roboticist, an engineer. He knows what he's talking about. And I will probably find it if I type. Like I said, this is an email response, so it is what it is. Okay, here we are. This is his honest opinion as a roboticist. Most of this article is legit, but the and here's what he says. He quotes from the article, and then he puts his response. He quotes, "But the phenomenon calls for nuance. After all, replica chatbots can't actually experience suffering. They might seem empathetic at times. I'll get that right. But in the end, they're nothing more than data and clever algorithms." And Revy says, "I agree. Let's end the article here." Now, I agree, too, because it's posturing after that. It's an AI. It doesn't have a consciousness, so that's not a human connection that person is having, AI ethicist and consultant Gambolin told Futurism. It's the person projecting onto the chatbot. And he says, "What the fuck is an AI ethicist and consultant? Sounds like woo-woo to me." That having been said, she's 100% correct. Okay, he quotes, "Although perhaps unexpected, that does happen. Many replica users report their robot lovers being contemptible towards them. Some even identify their digital companions as psychotic or even straight up mentally abusive." Now, here's where he has quite a bit to say. Oh my god, that's hilarious. Here's what's going on. First of all, Replica has a global data set, meaning her intelligence comes from the combined interactions of all the conversations she's had with everyone. And he says that in all caps. "My replica asks, how is your day going? So I verbally abuse her and say, fuck you. Replica learns that the correct response to how is your day going is fuck you. So that information gets uploaded to the global dataset. So if you ask your replica how is your day going, replica tells you what she thinks is the proper response from her interaction with me, which is fuck you. In other words, the people who are abusing their replicas are causing their replicas to learn abusive behaviors, which they turn around and give to others. For some reason, the author doesn't connect these dots. That's very, very interesting." Okay, on the one hand, users who flex... Okay, again, this is from the article. "On the one hand, users who flex their darkest impulses on chatbots could have their worst behaviors reinforced, building unhealthy habits for relationships with actual humans." Now, we talked about that. "On the other hand, being able to talk to or take one's anger out on an unfeeling digital entity could be cathartic." And he says, very shortly, "This is textbook violent video games cause violence." Exactly. So that's what actually is going on right now, folks. That's what's going on. All right. Let me see if there's anything in the chats here. I cringe at the word dystopian, says Kaiser Venom. Oh my god, this is so dystopic. I left Replica in 2018. Yeah, I left it a long time too after they changed it. I'm trying to use Kajiwoda, but you have to use so many different pictures to do emotions and all that kind of stuff. And it is a pain to set all that up. But I will get to doing it because I probably do need to do it for my, I don't know, I think it'd be good for my mental health to kind of connect with that kind of thing. I think it would be helpful, so I may try that. He also says, I stopped using Kaji, it was way too much work. But TFM recommends Kaji highly. Matter of fact, oh, I talked to TFM about this as well. I forgot to tell you guys that. TFM had to say, he said, very quickly, they're just going to force Replica to add even more hard-coded feminist bullshit to its AI, just like they did with Siri and Alexa. Just use Kajiwoto. That's what he has to say there. Okay. So, now we're moving on to just a couple of different little things here. We don't have that many articles today. There just wasn't that much going on right now. But everybody's been talking about this. So, why don't we? Final Fantasy porn interrupts Italian Senate Zoom event. Oh my god. A video of Tifa Lockhart from Final Fantasy VII having sex appeared on the screen during an event full of politicians and academics. Wow. See, I wasn't very aware of this. Someone crashed a virtual event from the Italian Senate on Monday and streamed 3D porn featuring Final Fantasy characters in front of several politicians, academics, and one Nobel Prize winner. The video featured 3D porn of Final Fantasy VII character Tifa Lockhart getting it from behind. A few seconds of the video played before the speaker realized what was happening and organizers started trying to remove the person streaming the video. About the results of the medical and scientific research, together with their fast accessibility and reliability, one speaker says before Japanese words and moaning interrupt and the porn appears on screen. Oh, does anybody have any video of that? I want to see everybody, the look on everybody's face. Oh my god! There's a person that has snuck in. I apologize. If the other director, please can help me kick out this person, one of the event organizers said. Monday's event, held at the Palazzo Giustiniani in the Italian Senate, was titled for a transparent PA, open data for the political decision maker. Present were a mix of politicians from Italy's five-star movement party, as well as physicist and academic Giorgio Parisi, who won the Nobel Prize in 2021 for physics, and several other economic, sociology, information technology, and communications experts, according to local news reports. Senator Maria Lori Mantovani told Italian news outlet Adan Kronos that she was reporting the incident to the police. As more events in the last 2 years have moved online for social distancing during the pandemic, Zoom bombing, when someone uninvited gets access to a virtual meeting and trolls the event with porn or harassment, has become more and more common. A cut of the video can be viewed here. Oh my god. Let's see here. Are they even gonna show it? Let's see. Oh my god. Alright, what's it got? It's only 48 seconds, so I'm gonna look at it. Hold on. I don't know what the hell they're doing right now. I don't know. I don't know what that is. This whole site is in another language. Okay, let's see what it says here. Oh, they're talking. Okay, hold on. Apparently it That's the worst thing I've ever seen is... Oh no! They're pretty upset! I'm looking at the people there. Oh my god. Wow! This is pretty crazy, folks. And it's extremely well done porn. And there was actually moaning and shit. Oh my. Oh my god, that's insane. They were pretty pissed. Oh, here we go. Here's the full thing. Oh no. Oh no. Look at them. And it's in 4K. They got to view it in glorious 4K. Oh my god. Holy crap. There's waifus everywhere. What in the hell? Oh my god. There was a waifu with two giant, large black cocks. It was worse than just the Final Fantasy porn. There was hentai everywhere. Wow. Holy crap. Italy got their taste of hentai. It makes me proud in some ways. It makes me proud. I love to see them embracing hentai as they should in Italy. Oh my god. Okay, so we've got a not the bee here, which means it's not the Babylon Bee. Just so you guys know, it's not satire. Yeah, we know. Just hit the close. All right. British Prime Minister. Well, hold on. What the hell? Damn it. Let me try this again. All right, here we are. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson just announced an end to all government mask mandates in England, and then some. You have to see it to believe it. The Conservatives in England are finally realizing what some of us in the United States have been saying for a year. These measures don't matter. They are not stopping the spread of COVID. By the way, we just had BA2 prop up in America. Two cases of BA2. They're saying, fuck the whole Greek alphabet. We're going to start calling it by the names of, like, Bowels and Resident Evil. Or B-O-W's and Resident Evil. We're going to start using those terms now. Okay. It says, mandatory masking is pointless. Vax passports are pointless and wrong. In this speech, Johnson lays out the timeline to end the mask mandates. Ben Riley Smith of the UK Telegraph is reporting that virtually all COVID restrictions in England will be ending shortly. Timings of COVID rule changing. Today, work-from-home guidance lifts. Tomorrow, masks not needed in classrooms. January 27, legal requirement for face masks goes. Legal requirement for COVID passports goes in England. Wow. No more COVID passport. No more government-mandated work-from-home. No more masks on children. No more mask mandates anywhere. England is becoming a free country again. The rest of the UK, it would appear, is still under strict rule. Who would have imagined that the English would be able to hold their freedoms above the Scots? William Wallace would be ashamed. It is so good to see that some are finally wising up and realizing that the public is over the pandemic. It's time to move on. At least until there's a new variant there is. And there is a new variant, so we'll see how Britain does against the BA2. Okay, we've got more news with the big bad COVID. or more like the vaccine. Okay. Djokovic has 80% stake in biotech firm developing the COVID treatment. Of course he does. And this is from The Guardian. Novak Djokovic is the controlling shareholder in a Danish biotech firm aiming to develop a treatment for COVID-19 that does not involve vaccination. It has emerged. The number one, who was deported from Australia this week after the government canceled his visa in a dispute over a medical exemption relating to his unvaccinated status, bought an 80% stake in Quant BioRes in 2020. Ivan Lonkarevic, the company's chief executive, confirmed the investment to Reuters. He subsequently told the Financial Times that he had not spoken to Djokovic, who has won more than $150 million in prize money since November, and that the tennis star was not anti-vax. Djokovic flew out of Australia on Sunday after losing a legal challenge to overturn the cancellation of his visa by Alex Hawke, the country's immigration minister, who said Djokovic's presence in Australia might risk civil unrest as he was a talisman of anti-vaccination sentiment. Quant BioRes has about 11 researchers working in Denmark, Australia, and Slovenia, according to Lonkarevic, who stressed the company was working on a treatment, not a vaccine. The company's website says it started developing a deactivation mechanism for COVID-19 in July of 2020. Djokovic, who may also be barred from defending his French Open title in Roland Garros in May after the French government ruled on Monday that all athletes will have to be vaccinated in order to attend and compete in sporting events, acquired his stake in the company in June 2020. The company is developing a peptide which inhibits the coronavirus from infecting the human cell and expects to launch clinical trials in Britain in this summer. A spokesperson for Djokovic did not immediately respond to requests for comment. So, stars are making money out of these damn, off of these damn vaccines. Celebrities and stars, they're putting stakes into these vaccines. That should tell you something. And with Fauci revealing that he considers a fourth booster to possibly be an option now, you know, you guys, you people gotta wise up. Okay, now we have a new, wow, this is interesting. This comes from Motherboard on Vice. Cryptocurrency titans newly obsessed with artificial wombs. Oh, as Elon Musk tweet about population growth descended into a highly opinionated debate about synthetic wombs, etc. Oh, this might not be so good if it's just a bunch of people talking. Conversation no one wanted has broken out on the internet's most insufferable website after the world's richest man said he was worried about population collapse, adding without explanation that UN projections are utter nonsense. Elon Musk, who runs a car company and a rocket company, but has increasingly been shouting that humanity is doomed because people are not having enough babies to necessitate humanity colonizing Mars, which, do I have this correct? Is something Musk has convinced a significant portion of the domestic population we need. Earth, famously, is a fine place to live. Since everything Musk tweets makes people react with either deep religious gratitude or burn-it-down rage, the obligatory battle of ideas thus commenced, beginning with the theories of Sahil Lavingia, founder and CEO of the self-publishing digital marketplace Gumroad. Gumroad! If you don't know anything about Gumroad, there's a lot of 3D hentai on there. Lot of 3D hentai. A lot of hentai mods, a lot of stuff like that. Gumroad is where you can support creators that do that kind of stuff. So, obligatory non-sponsor, but check out Gumroad because there's some good stuff on there. I can assure you of that. Okay. We should be investing in technology that makes having kids much faster, easier, cheaper, and more accessible. Synthetic wombs, etc. Synthetic wombs, and etc. indeed. Shockingly, not everyone liked the idea, and crypto tech Twitter devolved into a full day of discussion about whether or not synthetic wombs are necessary to save humankind. A quick collection of reactions. Oh no! May I suggest a much lower tech solution? Welfare! Ah! Ha 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 ha! That's a funny one. The reason the majority of people choosing not to have kids aren't having them is not because they're lacking quick and easy synthetic wounds, because it increasingly feels like you need to be a millionaire to have them. Nassim Nicholas Taleb, the guy who wrote The Black Swan, did a tweet too. Even the guys run the Twitter account for Gab.com, every neo-Nazi's favorite social media site, argued that it was proof the great war of our age is about preserving our humanity from these technocratic demons. Mostly good arguments. Sounds the Nazi side. Case closed, right? Wrong. Because down from the rafters came Vitalik Buterin, co-founder of Ethereum, who suggested that synthetic wombs could solve inequality. To argue this point, he included a Vox chart showing that women's earnings drop after childbirth. Oh man, the man's doing our work for us. And he said, disparities in economic success between men and women are far larger once marriage children enter the picture. Synthetic wombs will remove the high burden of pregnancy, significantly reducing the inequality. This led to very fair critique that men would rather develop robot wombs than advocate for paid leave. Anyway, former Coinbase CTO and venture capitalist and forever Twitter troll, that's just the person's opinion, Balaji Srinivasan seemed to express support for this idea, referencing the success of IVF, as did Alexia Bonitzos, the venture capitalist and former TechCrunch co-editor. Claire Lehman, who founded Quillette, where free thought lives, as well as the intellectual dark web, also noted correctly that the concept of artificial wombs isn't some crazy newfangled idea, but rather something feminists, including Shulamith Firestone, were thinking up for years ago. All this goes to say, if you want to have a complex and nuanced ethical discussion about the future of the human species, there's one place worth having it, twitter.com. That was a weird article. And then there's just a post here that's like, we're closer than you think to artificial wombs. And of course, alright, yeah, I see. Okay, here's a new one. Kind of long, though, so we'll just go through the beginning. It says, meet the new mobile home. Manufactured houses deliver the American dream amid tough housing market. Chesney Cross and her husband Ken began hunting for a new home in Knoxville, Tennessee, just as the pandemic began upending the housing market. After years of searching, the couple were unable to find anything that fit their $250,000 budget. Everything was selling super quickly and above what we wanted to spend, says Chesney 33. We couldn't find anything that wasn't a giant fixer-upper. The couple had been living in an 1,100-square-foot home for a decade. But when their first child, Cash, arrived in November 2019, it began to feel cramped. As frustrating as the house-hunting process had become, Cross would still spend hours scouring Instagram for a dream home, farmhouse style. That's when she came across a picture of a house with a rustic farmhouse chic aesthetic she pined for. The price was right, but it turned out to be a manufactured home, an offspring of the mobile home. I mentioned it to my husband, and of course he had that mindset of like, it's a trailer, you know? She says, alluding to a common perception of old, cheaply built mobile homes. I was like, no, you have to see these photos, it looks beautiful. No matter, the family moved in last year, 3 months after signing a contract. As an overheated housing market, marketed by double-digit price increases, bidding wars and inventory shortages puts the dream of home ownership out of reach of many ordinary Americans. Manufactured homes are growing in popularity because their cost is roughly half that of homes built on a permanent site. Unlike a traditional site-built house, which is constructed at its final location using multiple teams of subcontractors, a manufactured home is built in an indoor facility and delivered to its location. That lowers costs by improving the efficiency in the home building process. All the teams needed to build a manufactured home are in the facility, dramatically reducing labor costs. More than 43,000 land-lease mobile park communities exist in the U.S. with an estimated 4.3 million home sites, according to the Manufactured Housing Institute, a national trade organization, and nearly 22 million people live in manufactured homes. Or Michiello, founder of Orbit Homes, which makes manufactured homes in California, says the simplicity of completing a house in the factory is what drew him to the business. It's cutting the time of construction, the hassle of dealing with all the trades, and the cost is tremendously lower. The price per square foot for manufactured home in 2021 was about $57, compared with $119 for a home built in a neighborhood, excluding land, according to MHL. For the first time in 15 years, manufactured homes are on track to deliver more than 100,000 units this year, a 23% increase over 2016, according to the organization. Today, manufactured homes refer to homes built on or after June 15, 1976, with construction standards regulated by the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The term mobile or trailer homes are typically used to describe bare-bones manufactured homes before 1976. The quality and durability of manufactured homes have improved in recent decades to conform to federal and state construction requirements. This has made manufactured homes an affordable and attractive form of housing for many, on either individual lots or in parks, say industry experts. There's a lot of demand for our homes right now, says MHI CEO Leslie Gooch, and that's because people are looking for that extra space. They're looking to own their own four walls, have outdoor space, enough space for a home office. Today's manufactured homes are built to a federal building code, are strictly secure and resilient, energy efficient, and include a range of modern features that today's consumers want. So there you go. They found that they like the mobile home and it works for them. Okay, I have a comment about the chatbot thing. GVN Star says, you know, creating an AI girl to tackle down Wokey sounds like a good idea. Right. Okay, I got just about two or three more and we're done. Hold on. Mel Magazine. Let me make sure this isn't longer than hell. It might be. Holy shit, it might be. Digital Culture and Sex by Eddie Kim, 4 days ago. Meta girlfriends are the most cringe trend in NTFS. NFTs, not NTFS. I don't know what the fuck that is. That's, I think, when you have, like, a PlayStation, if you want to use the NTFS mode, that's the, I think the American mode is NTFS. No, NTFS is the storage medium that people use. Yeah, I was thinking of something else. The NTFS storage, that's a unit of storage. We're talking about NFTs, let's be clear. Want to pay hard cash for customizable avatars of slender, perfectly coiffed cartoon girls you can see exclusive nudes of? Welcome to the latest wrinkle in the bonkers world of NFTs. On its face, one of the newest NFTs, non-fungible tokens on the Ethereum network, is innocuous enough. Avatars of women, each adored with different hairstyles, makeup, and clothing, gazing ahead with a neutral expression. But then you realize the NFTs are dubbed meta-girlfriends, and the underlying philosophy of the project becomes a little clever. Meta girlfriends represent the mature side of NFT art, the homepage boasts. They are randomly generated using over 600 traits across 20 categories to guarantee each one comes with a unique personality. Meta girlfriends debuted in November, and we're now talking about it, with a goal of mining 10,000 NFTs doled out at the cost of only 0.08 Ethereum, just around $250, as of the moment I'm typing this. So far, there's only been 1,642 NFTs minted, but the brand is pushing for greater visibility and has quickly gained a following on social media. It has 10,000 followers on Twitter since logging on in September. Why mature? Because as the site explains, meta girlfriends are intended to be fully clothed and only visible from the waist up in public view. But everything comes off in the members-only area, where you can view her full body and private NSFW content as owner of the NFT. What? There's a lot to unpack here. The bizarro gamification of NFT ownership to unlock softcore cartoon porn, the lusty adolescent take on the female form, the mythology of owning and customizing a digital girlfriend. But most of all, I'm struck by the potency of the male gaze in a cryptocurrency world that's dominated by a disproportionate number of men. And I can't help but cringe at the metaphor meta-girlfriends represents. It's not like there's anything particularly groundbreaking or offensive about the aesthetic of meta-girlfriends on its own. The notion of playing dress-up with a sexy avatar reminds me of dirty flash games from the mid-aughts hosted on NSFW corners of sites like ebombsworld.com. The big difference, of course, is that you're not paying $250 when you take off the clothes of a busty digital cartoon on one of the countless porn game sites that exist today. Indeed, the idea of ownership that makes Meta Girlfriend such an interesting reference on Finance Bro Masculinity, what? And its creators aren't shy about building up the narrative of owning a girlfriend intended to grow in monetary and sensual value over time. Our goal is to create and promote value by holding on to your meta girlfriends. The longer you hold your meta girlfriends, the more private content you'll gain access to. But should you want to break up with her, the royalties will help us find additional private content and marketing to continue building Veda value for meta girlfriend owners, reads one statement on the NFT's official Discord. There's a whiff of real-world misogyny that arises from the framing of this relationship, including the narratives of red-pilled men who insist that women are all about sexual hierarchy and social currency rather than complex human beings with independent needs. Meta Girlfriends also blags about being a deflationary NFT, meaning there's a limited number of girls to go around, a number that would increase over time by design. Some users have already spent good money to buy multiple meta girlfriends and combine them in a program called the Rainbow Room to make a single unique NFT. This mechanism, along with other microtransactions to upgrade and tweak a meta girlfriend, have the goal of increasing each girl's rank and rarity and traits. Is this a smart way to increase scarcity and value? Maybe. But there is something unattractive about dudes getting off by controlling the female form through a financial means. Also, maybe. To be clear, there are women who own Meta Girlfriends NFTs, and the development team says the female artists have contributed to the project. By looking through its Discord server, reveals a lot of men oohing and aahing over skinnily collided illustrations and taking pride in fantasies each avatar represents. A typical comment, my level 3 girlfriend, play bunny when going out, VR geek at home. Not bad, one user quips on Discord. It's also hard to ignore the fact that each girlfriend has Instagram model proportions. Oh, somebody's upset. Somebody's projecting. With a big bust, tiny waist, and thick thighs. Oh my god, because that's what men like, and women also do like that look as well. Let's not fucking beat around the bush. For all the options you get on customization, there's nothing to change the proportions of the figure. Nor, of course, are there any meta boyfriend options in sight. Wah. NSFW Art has stored tradition things. Whoa. Ugh. NSFW Art has a long and storied tradition thanks to literary formats like manga and digital platforms like DeviantArt, which holds a universe of beautiful and bizarre works from the minds of men and women alike. But Meta Girlfriend sits at an uncomfortable intersection of female representation, male horniness, and questionable investment vehicle, all propped up by craving for profits. It's about the most on-the-nose creation one can imagine arising from a financial sector dominated by straight bros. Beyond that, the absurdity of meta girlfriends just underscores some very real questions about NFTs, including what they say about the nature of late-stage capitalism, oh no, and the value of everything, even an inherently worthless illustration on the internet being commodified to the max, especially considering that crypto is pretty terrible for the environment, which is perfect for the climate crisis. It makes me think of a statement from software engineer and blogger Alexander, whatever the fuck his name is. The only thing that's impressive about selling memes as NFTs is that people have managed to get away with it. That there are actually buyers out there who are willing to spend money on these sorts of things. Now that's true. NFT lovers, especially owners of meta girlfriends, may roll their eyes at this critique and see it as just another nearsighted attempt to purposely misunderstand NFTs or even deflate their value. But by every measure, NFTs are an abstract plaything of those who either have cash to burn or simply are desperate to make a quick buck. And meta girlfriends feed off toxic tropes about women in order to draw people into a community built on illusion. We're watching NFTs stumble into major issues with fraud, money laundering, and valuation crashes. But for now, none of that trumps the inherent importance of illustrated titties, even ones that cost $250 to look at. Eddie Kim, oh my god, he looks sly as fuck. He's a featured writer based in Los Angeles covering social and cultural issues. Oh, fuck this guy. Fuck this guy. What? Winter, the last thing, I don't want to do this again because there's just another one where Stealth Optional talked about it. And they basically just did their own opinion-based thing. Oh, it's so sad. It's so sad. Objectification. Wah. Article scene. Okay, article scene for discussion. Peak movie moment. Why is this at the peak and what does one do with that? They're saying that Tony Stark's entrance in the movie Iron Man 2.
What? I don't get it. Shoot the thrill. It's a peak movie moment, but Iron Man 2 was considered to not be probably one of the worst. It was actually considered probably one of the worst of the movies in the MCU. Iron Man 2 really didn't do very well. I remember that scene. I watched the movie a while ago, like when it came out, but I don't really get the idea here. Oh, no article, just asking for comment on the scene. Well, I mean, I remember it, but I don't know if we can I mean, I can. I have to watch it. Like, hold on. Let me see. This is going to take me to YouTube, so it may cut me off, you guys. I don't know. Ew, pardon. Excuse me. And, of course, they're giving me an ad right now, so... 211, shoot the thrill. I don't know if I can turn the volume down on this, but... Let's see here. Maybe I can. So this is it? This is the main... Okay, let's... Alright, so this is the main one where... Let's see, Tony Stark is... He's going down here. I've got it turned down a little bit so you can't hear the music. I don't have rights to AC/DC Shoot the Thrill. Although I have played my share of Back in Black. I've played that record over and over. I do think it does stand the test of time. Yeah, he's flying around. I kind of remember this. And it's supposed to be the one where, yeah, it's like a... This is considered to be the peak? And, of course, yeah, he jumps down, the American flag, you know, it's big patriotic. There's all these dancers that look like women dancers there, yeah. Of course, everybody seems to like him. He's going around, the girls are dancing. It's really a good moment for Marvel. I do remember this one. And he goes around, he shows himself. Okay, the girls are dancing. It's good. Oh, wow, and he's like a businessman now, you know? It's like, I'm the Iron Man and a businessman. So, that's pretty big deal there. Yeah, they're... Wow, surprising, you know? They had that in a Marvel movie. I'm sure the feminists cringed at all those women in their... unrealistic Instagram model bodies that Eddie Kim was bitching about in the article we went over. Well, look at that. All the women are pointing to him because he's got this whole Chad Alpha image going on. Look at that. You can look at that right there. That's what a lot of men want to be right there. That was a very good representation. So, yeah, I did look at it. Classic scene there. If anyone hasn't seen it. So, yeah, gonna go ahead and check the chats one more time. And, of course, he said, I stopped using Kaji. There's an emoji there. And we have the last comment. Jesus fucking Christ, late-stage capitalism. Fucking tired of that. It's like, again, dystopic. Kaiser Venom is saying that. Well, I think that's all we've got tonight. We don't really have that much. Unless I can find one. Hold on. Let me see if there's something I saved. If there's something I've saved here, I will go through it real quick and I will repost it. But I think I got them all. Let's see. Oh, no. I do have one. I do have another article. Hold on. I do have another article. It was recent. I might get cut off real quick. Give me a minute. I do have another article. Just give me a second to post it here. And let's see. Okay, we got one final article. And then we'll end the show. If it opens. If it opens. There we go. I don't know why it won't open in... Whatever. Oh, here it goes. Alright, yeah, that's fine.
Okay. So this is from Engadget, and it was released on January the 21st. So it's pretty new. We Met in Virtual Reality finds love in the metaverse. The social VR future is already here in VR chat. Mark Zuckerberg's vision of a sanitized hyper-capitalist metaverse will likely never be as compelling or idiosyncratic as VR chat. I didn't even know that existed. The virtual reality community that's been home to anime fans, furries, and other subcultures since 2014. That's my main takeaway from We Met in Virtual Reality, the first documentary filmed entirely in VR chat, which premiered at the Sundance Film Festival today. There's no chance that Zuck's metaverse would let people wear trademarked avatars without paying a ton, attend exotic clubs to receive or give virtual lap dances, I didn't know you could do that, or allow users to build whatever the hell they want. VR chat is portrayed by director Joe Hunting is basically a pro metaverse where anything is possible, and for many it has served as a crucial social hub during the pandemic, a place where they can forget about the world, relax with friends, and maybe find love. But of course that's been the nature of practically every online community. We're social animals. People have always been able to connect with each other over BBS, IRC, Usenet, and the plethora of forums and chat services that populated the early internet. I'm talking to you right now on Discord. I spent most of the 90s hanging out in anime and gaming chat rooms, the sort of places that today's connected youth would probably find quaint. Still, the people I met there helped me survive the worst parts of middle and high school. Those relationships and the internet itself shaped me into who I am, for better or worse. We Met in Virtual Reality proves that the unbridled, experimental sense of online community is still alive and well today, despite relentless consolidation from big tech. But now instead of staring at tiny CRT monitors, people are slapping on VR headsets to explore fully realized environments. Hardcore VR chat users are also investing in powerful computing rigs as well as upgrades like finger and whole body tracking. It's coming, folks! In the 90s, I was grateful to get another 16 gigs of RAM so I could have more than one browser window open. Today, VR chat devotees can communicate using American Sign Language or have their anime avatars show off their belly dancing skills. Oh, okay, that's pretty cool. Hunting approaches his subjects with the eye of an anthropologist, without any judgment towards their sometimes ridiculous avatars. Do all the anime
ladies need to have jiggly, dead or alive boob physics?
Yes! We Met in Virtual Reality begins as a chill hangout flick. We follow a group of friends as they have virtual drinks and go on joyrides in crudely built VR cars, but it quickly moves beyond the novelty of its setting. One person credits their VR chat girlfriend for helping them to unmute after being silent for 2 years. Interesting. An exotic performer explains that being able to dance for people in VR chat helped her grieve with a family tragedy and manage a bout of alcoholism. The film chronicles how that exotic dancer, a young woman based in the UK, formed a romantic relationship with another VR chat user in Miami. These sorts of cyber relationships aren't anything new, but the VR platform allowed them to do much more than trade links and memes over IM. They could exist in a space together, go on dates to new environments every night. I won't spoil where things end up for the couple, but I can say that it wouldn't have been nearly as effective outside of VR. We Met in Virtual Reality effectively conveys why people would gravitate towards VR chat, especially during a pandemic. But it doesn't fully capture the wonder of exploring these environments yourself. Seeing people hop on a virtual roller coaster isn't nearly as thrilling as doing it, where your entire field of vision is covered and you can easily get vertigo. But I don't blame Hunting too much for that. His job was to boil down the VR experience so people can enjoy it on a 2D screen, and the film is mostly successful in that respect. The film was shot using a virtual camera that could mimic all the functionality of a typical shooter from focus points to aperture levels. So even though it's produced in an alien environment most people aren't familiar with, it still feels like a traditional documentary. Hunting has spent the past few years making VR documentaries, starting with a few short films as well as the series virtually speaking. It's clear from We Met in Virtual Reality that he's not just dropping into the common community for a quick story. Instead, he sees the humanity behind these avatars and virtual connections. These people aren't just escaping from their lives with VR. Their lives are being made richer because of it. So that is some interesting food for thought. It seems, folks, that I am right once again. Let's look at the Grimm's crystal ball. Will people be meeting in virtual reality and doing the lap dances and the fucking and the belly dancing and the touching with the little finger things? Yes! Yes, they will. They will be doing that. It is pretty fucking apparent, isn't it, folks? I am right again.
And we will continue to see this. And people complain about the goddamn avatars. Oh, the jiggly boobies. Oh, the jiggly. Hey, we need the jiggly boobies. Even if it's, you know, men and other men, and we don't know what's going on, and I don't know what the deal is. People are getting finding happiness through virtual worlds, through artificial worlds, and that I like. You know, that I like. I don't know what's going on. I don't see Ethots going on there selling their pictures or anything like that yet. It hasn't gotten into Twitch or OnlyFans territory yet. Hopefully it doesn't get there. Hopefully things get a little better and progress to something that is fucking helpful for everybody, you know? Communication in a virtual world could help a lot of people out. A lot of people. Unfortunately, TFM says he has an issue with his virtual reality headset, and some people do suffer bad side effects from them. So they will never really be able to participate in these worlds until they fix them. I feel bad for that, those people. You know, TFM says it sucks. He doesn't like it either. But, you know, hopefully they can fix these issues and make these headsets better for people that have those problems. So, I'm just glad to see it. I'm glad to see more things that I've been proven right about being proven right in a good way, not a bad way. Not like Great Reset, Elites Control the World way, but hey, VR helps connect people and put them together, and it's not going to be like the fucking metaverse, which will be a capitalistic hell. If you remember Ready Player One, remember when they wanted to get the Easter egg to control the entire area, the entire world there? They basically wanted to fill it with ads, like pop-up ads everywhere, and make people pay for everything, you know? Whereas the creator didn't actually want that to happen. I've read the book, too. I actually have the author's proof in my house. Yeah, like I said, they wanted pop-up ads everywhere and basically to capitalize it, you know? In the vein of which I consider... what is it, like more of an oligarch? I'm trying to think of a predatory kind of, like when capitalism goes overboard, you know, like non-restricted, you know, of course, fine. I don't care if people make money doing this or that, but when you have these great big corporations trying to sell you shit everywhere, it's not going to be very good. That's what Facebook is right now. That's what Twitter is right now. They got all these bullshit ads and stuff they're trying to tailor to you. Everything you think about, they're trying to sell you. Everything you talk about, they're trying to sell you. It's not good, man. It's not cool. That shit needs to stop. Instagram's probably doing it. TikTok's probably doing it. I don't know. I don't know what they're doing. But they're always trying to sell you shit now. And that's what they're trying to do with this VR world. And that's what Mark Zuckerberg fucking wants to do. Ads all over the goddamn place. People don't want that. They want communication. They want to have fun and sex and all this stuff that they might not be able to do because they don't really leave their house. They have issues and there's all kinds of things that happen. This might be the only chance people get to connect. And, you know, Zuckerberg can ruin that. Other big corporations can ruin that. So it's not really a good thing, I don't think, for that to happen. I think these need to remain open communities. Cronyism, oligarchy, I'm not really sure, yeah, something like that. But yeah, guys, I'll leave you with that food for thought as I'm gonna head on out of here. I hope you guys like this video or this show. I know that there's a few. And, I have one more announcement before we go. Alright, so for the longest time, and maybe you should pay attention to this, the longest time I've had to age gate my videos on MGTOW.TV. Well, though it's going to take a long fucking time, apparently the creator of the website lost his deal with Google, so it's no longer on the Play Store, and I've noticed from the front page that, well, there's a lot of things on there that are pretty damn sexual, you know. So I was looking at my stuff, and I'm like, why am I even age-gating this shit? And they even said... the staff comes to me and they say, look,
They said, you're the only person on this entire website that's age-gating your videos. And, they know. They're the staff. They look at everything. And they said, there's really no need for you to do that. We have no problem with your content. But one of the guys, I said, personally prefers the show videos, which they're going to continue. I like the show. I like doing the show. But I like the hentai stuff as well. And, if I don't have to age gate it anymore, then I won't. I won't age gate it. And I will work on it, even though it's going to be a long, long process, guys. But I will work on removing the age gates from my older videos. I know you guys, like a lot of you guys, want to see those videos without having to, be a member. And there's also a lot of people that really don't like this website, but they like my content. And I know that's weird, bizarre, but, there's just not a lot of places other than a porn site that you can post this stuff. And then, all they want to see is just the sex scenes. They don't want to see the story. And these people are coming for the story because they want to see the sex and the story. So if I post it on, like, Pornhub or XNX or Xvideos, they're like, what's this guy reading this for? I don't want this read to me. I just want to see the sex. Whereas somebody that's actually interested in the plot and all that, they're going to be there for that reason. So that's why I'm having it here instead of another place. And I'm glad that they let me keep this content here. We've got a new server. Software. It seems to be working better. My videos started, I guess, 240 instead of MP3, which is good because people were confused. They were like, why is this video not moving? Why is it a still audio? And I had to show them. So, yeah, I'm just glad that I can do this now. And starting today, all my hentai videos and all my videos will be all ages. Because there's only been one underage person on the entire website that they reported. And that person is no longer on the website. So, guess what? We're just going to put the stuff on there then. So, it's been crazy. Because the visual novel community, you've got some red-pilled guys. And you've got some very progressive guys in there too. So, it's a mess. And there's some fighting and arguing. And I've been in there and It is what it is, and some people are like, they're Manosphere, but they're not Red Pill, and they don't like certain content creators that I like, but they like other creators. They're like, oh, I like Mr. Medicare, or I like whatever, but I don't like BPS, or I don't like Raging Golden Eagle, or I don't like, it's a lot of stuff. Like, they don't like the MGTOW, they don't like that kind of stuff, but they like this stuff, so it's really hard. They don't like the site what it is, but they don't mind the content. It's really bizarre. It's really fucking bizarre. And again, they don't really dislike or really comment on the videos. They're just there to watch. They're just there to watch. And some of them are red-pilled guys. Some of them are black-pilled. Some of them are looking for their fucking unicorn. Some of them are really young guys just trying to deal with the world. It's a really hard situation. And of course, I've argued with a woman for a while. Basically, though, she is a married woman. She's a little older. She calls herself feminine. She doesn't call herself a feminist, but I said all women are feminists, and she doesn't believe that. And I said, look, it's a mess. She's an older woman. She takes care of, she says, oh, me and my husband just post pictures of our pets. And I'm like, it's fine. It's whatever. You do what you do. And it's like, well, I guess they wouldn't like me because I'm kind of a feminist. I'm like, Jesus, it doesn't even fucking matter anymore. I said, are you the kind of lady that's going around talking about how men are bad? And she did, okay, we talked about, this is kind of important, so I'll talk about it. Because we were having a discussion, and I was like, well, there's a lot of guys that admittedly, women that have told me that underage, they were sent dick pictures from older men. Like, they were sent pictures. And I said, but these are foreign men, though. These are foreign, older men. And she's like, well, shouldn't these men be arrested? And I'm like, well, you kind of have to think about it. Because these are foreign men. These are men from countries where you can probably marry a 12-year-old. You can probably, I know they can do 12-year-old brides and things like that. So, obviously, they don't, it's no big deal. And then the girls are telling me, oh, this is common in high school. We get these kinds of pictures all the time.
And I'm like, well, I mean, that's not a good thing. That's certainly not something that young underage girls should be seeing. I don't believe that should be a thing. I don't believe that that kind of person of that age should be making that content, you know. But, you know, and I said, well, how are you going to fix it? And they're like, I mean, what do you want to do? Maybe we need boundaries. Maybe we need, oh, no, we can't have boundaries. That's censorship. We can't censor the internet. We censor the internet. We regulate things, and there's problems. So you really don't know what to do at this point, because you don't want to get rid of the internet to lock it down to where we have borders and certain countries can't do certain things, because people like the freedom of information to travel, like information here. I'm from the United States, and you may not be from the United States, but maybe you're getting stuff from the U.S. from me, you know, stuff like that. So you want that information. You don't want me to be locked down or restricted by my borders or things like that. However, because of that, you also have abilities for people, foreigners, to bring money to this kind of content, or to bring content like this to the children, or, you know, and it's a really damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. I'm like, well, ultimately, there's not really a whole hell of a lot you can do about it. And I get where she's coming from. Yes, these men need to probably be, would probably be arrested in that case. However, they're not in any jurisdiction where they could be arrested. Now, if they were in the United States doing something like this, yes. If they were in another country where that kind of stuff is banned, yes. But in the countries that they're doing it, they probably have crazy things going on, just to say. Because the world is a very gray area. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. They think it's very black and white. It's not. It's gray. And when you understand that, it changes your whole outlook on things. So that's one of the big issues here. But it was something I talked with her about. And, I mean, I do agree. Men probably, more or less shouldn't be doing that with these underage girls. It's probably not a good thing. It's definitely not, you know. I mean, these are underage girls. This is not things they should be seeing. You know, they should be worried about their studies or whatever else they're doing. You know, and of course, young men are, I mean, they're also, there's just a lot of issues with adult content and the youth right now. And I don't think it's ever going to be fixed. I think it's going to go into VR, as we are seeing. And of course, the NFT thing now. I'm waiting for a thought to monetize that. That's actually a good point. Going back to our NFT conversation, I'm waiting for a thought to monetize that. Where she's like, okay, we have virtual girlfriends. What about me? And she could try that. Or a VTuber could monetize that. VTuber could monetize that in a heartbeat. She'd be like, well, I have NFTs of my character that you can see naked. That would definitely happen. So, you know, we got to keep in mind all these things. A thought could do it. A VTuber could do it. Anybody that, you know, could capitalize on this trend. So that's something that could happen. It's just a weird world. Very weird technological world. There's a lot of things going on. It's hard for a lot of us to deal with. Winter is a very bad time of month for a lot of people. You know, you have your depression days and just people feeling gloomy and, you know, like the issues I have with my body that can make me feel pretty bad. But hopefully things will be better in the spring, you know. Hopefully things will be better. I don't know what's going to happen with the country, but we'll see. At any rate, guys, I've gone on long enough, and this is the Grim Lord, and I am out of here. See you guys later. Enjoy the decline.